Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns over the air and online at koacountry1077.com and at lava1053.com. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here every Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country, 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava, 105.3 FM. Today we're talking about a scary, sad topic, and that is sexual assault. I'm joined by several people on the island who are involved in this issue in different ways. First, Captain Chad Bosky, representing Hawaii County Police. Captain Bosky has 25 years of service with Hawaii County Police and gets involved in investigating cases and arresting the alleged perpetrators. Good morning. Aloha, Captain Bosky.
Good morning.
We also have, by phone, Hawaii County Deputy Prosecutor Michelle West, who was appointed to be the Specialized Sexual Assault Unit Supervisor at the Hawaii County Prosecutor's Office in February 2015. She has about 20 years as a prosecutor and works extensively on sexual assault cases. Good morning, Aloha, Prosecutor West.
Good morning, Aloha.
We're also joined by Deborah Chai, who's with the Victims Assistant Unit of the Office of Prosecuting Attorney. Good morning, Aloha, Deborah.
Good morning.
You know, I think the roles of Captain Bosky and Michelle West are fairly clearly defined. Give us a real short thumbnail of what is the Victims Assistance Unit?
We work in the prosecutor's office, and our role is really to assist victims of violent crimes through the criminal justice system. So we advocate for them. We're the liaison between the prosecutor and the victim. So we're there to be the person that they can lean on and explain the crazy criminal justice system.
We also have Maggie Thorpe with the Children's Justice Center, and that's part of the state judiciary and also part of a nationwide network of professionals who assist children who have been abused and then have therefore become part of the justice system. Maggie has worked in this field in Virginia and here on the island. Good morning. Aloha, Maggie.
Good morning.
Finally, Lorraine Davis is with the YWCA, which staffs the only sexual assault hotline on the island and is involved in helping victims get treatment and counseling. The YWCA's programs encompass the entire island. Good morning. Aloha, Lorraine.
Good morning.
Okay, I'd like to start with something pretty clear, which is what exactly is sexual assault? How do you define it? And I'd like to start with you, Michelle, because you're in the prosecutor's office.
Sure. Sexual assault can be defined as sexual contact or behavior that occurs without explicit consent of the victim. To give you a couple of examples, penetration of the victim's body, more commonly known as a rape. It could be attempted rape. It could be forcing a victim to perform sex acts, such as oral sex, or forcing the victim to penetrate the perpetrator's body. And it also could be fondling or any sort of unwanted sexual touching.
Is the definition different if it is a child victim versus an adult victim?
Not really. I think that people more commonly know sexual assault as it's perpetrated on children as child molestation. But you still have rape, attempted rape, fondling, or forcing child victims to perform acts on the perpetrator. So it's all sexual assault, but just the term child molestation is probably more commonly known.
Thank you. Now, Lorraine Davis, you're with the YWCA of Hawaii Island, and I want to ask you about statistics, because I know that the YWCA is very heavily involved with sexual assault victims. So tell us about statistics. How many such assaults exist here on this island every year? And if you can split it into child versus adult, that might be helpful.
Well, last year we had 275 cases. So this is coming through our sex assault line. When we open up a case in the crisis line, it may not necessarily mean that it goes to the police because we're dealing with adult and children. So we may have an adult where the statute of limitations is over or that they were molested as children, but now they want to seek help. So we had 275 cases come in. 88 of those cases were female last year. 55% were minors, 17 or under. 5%, this is kind of interesting because people think that sex assault is about a stranger jumping out of a bush in a dark alley. 5% was where the offender was a stranger.
5%? One of the things I wanted to ask you was, what's the profile of a perpetrator of sexual assault? And you're telling me that 95% of the cases are essentially friendly faces?
They know them, yes.
Wow. I think that's kind of a shocking statistic for most people, because you're right. I think of sexual assault as sort of the stranger jumping out of the bush. You mentioned your sexual assault line. Give us a look at what that is so we know how you're getting this information, how these reports are coming to you.
Anybody who's been sexually assaulted, and we aren't in the business to determine whether they were or weren't, so we're not investigative, they can call the crisis line, which is 935-0677. It's manned 24 hours a day. Basically, they just have to say, I need some help, I've been sexually assaulted, and we start working them through the process. We offer them crisis stabilization. We try to get them out of the trauma. We ask enough questions to determine whether or not we need to call out the sex assault response team on the island, which involves the police, CJC, prosecutors. We have a big web of support people that we can call out for support, and nurses who do forensic exams. So based on the information that we get, we can call out the team and we get the ball rolling. The other thing that we do is that we offer therapy for victims and their families.
I want to go back to one statistic you mentioned. Did you say 55% are minors?
53 this past year, yes.
Wow. Okay. That's also kind of a daunting statistic. And that leads me to Captain Chad Boskey. Lorraine mentioned 275 assaults last year. Does that track with how many ultimately get reported to the police so you can actually do something?
Yeah. In fact, 275, that's the same number that I came up with last year. This year, in 2015, we've got 159 reported so far. So we're probably going to be pretty close to what we had last year.
It sounds like it. And that leads me to, what do you think about whether the rate of sexual assault on this island is comparable to the rate of sexual assault elsewhere in the country? Are we similar or different?
My personal opinion is I think we're similar. We know that this is a very underreported crime. I know that Hawaii is very unique in a lot of aspects, but I don't think we're unique in the statistics being different. And the statistics nationally are 1 to 3 in 4 women will have been sexually assaulted by the time they're 18, and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually assaulted by the time they're 18.
Okay, so we're very similar to other places, which I guess is good or bad, except that I always think of Hawaii Island and Hawaii the state as maybe better than other places, but apparently this is a sad crime that happens everywhere. What is the profile of a person who commits sexual assault? Who does this?
Just about anyone. I don't think there's an actual profile. It's just a crime of opportunity, I believe.
Michelle West, what do you think? You're the one who ends up prosecuting a lot of these cases. Who is it who is committing sexual assault?
There really is no profile, Sherry. Captain Boskey is 100% right. We sometimes ask jurors, particularly if you have a very handsome, good-looking defendant, what do you think about the way he looks? What does a child molester look like to you? There really is no profile.
Is there a profile of a victim of sexual assault?
Anybody can be a victim, but again, like Captain Boskey said, you know, vulnerable people often are victims. Children are often victims because they're children. They're taught to obey adults. They're taught to do whatever we tell them to do. So that fact alone makes them vulnerable. And if there's any profile, I would say children.
If somebody has been sexually assaulted or believes they've been sexually assaulted, what should they do? Lorraine Davis, I'm going to ask you to answer this question from the YWCA perspective. You've mentioned the hotline. Is that the first thing somebody should do, is call the sex assault hotline or call the police?
It depends on the situation. We obviously want them to get help. If they need medical attention, they need to report to the emergency room. The emergency room will call the police.
Always?
Yes. That's their standard operating procedure. We also want them to call the police because, frankly, we want the perpetrator off the streets.
Even if it's someone the victim knows.
Yes. And that's one of the reasons why they won't report. And then if they don't want to do either one of those, then the third option would be call us, because we really don't care what the situation is or looks like. We want them to get some help, and we'll take the ball from there.
Chad Boskey, if somebody calls the police and says, I have been sexually assaulted, I have been raped, I have been whatever, what do the police do?
Well, first, our first responders, which is the patrol officers, will make contact with the victim. Oftentimes, we have them just walk into our front door, or as Lorraine had mentioned, we get called by the hospital, so we'll meet up there, or where, you know, wherever the most convenient would be, and we initiate the report. our patrol officer would start the investigation, and soon after you'd be sent over to one of our specialized detectives in our juvenile aid section who would then continue the report. At that time, we would get together with Lorraine's group, and as a SART or a sexual assault response team, we'd work together. Of course, we handled the criminal aspect of it. We're looking for evidence. We're looking for witnesses. We work hand in hand with Lorraine. As the process goes on further, then we would add on the component of the CJC.
The CJC being the Children's Justice Center.
Yeah, if we have a juvenile victim. If not, then we'll just continue on, and then we'll start getting the prosecutor's office involved, which would be Michelle and her group, as well as Deborah's group with the Victims Assistance Unit.
Captain Bosky, to what degree are first responders trained in what clearly can be a very traumatizing situation for a victim, where they may be hurt, they may just be scared, they may be terrified to speak? How do you guys get trained so you can handle this properly? Because it's not going to be the easiest thing for you guys to go out and deal with this.
Yes, it's a very sensitive type of investigation. So our training begins in our recruit class. Our recruits are provided with training from these same agencies, as well as internally from our detectives and other people who specialize in this investigation. And again, they're the first responders. We hope that they're very compassionate when they talk to our victims. What we stress to our guys is we always want them to believe them. It's always their victims, and whatever they tell us, that's what happened. And as we go along through the process of the investigation, then we'll learn other things through gathering information, statements of the victim, witnesses, or even through forensics. That's going to provide us additional information. It is a very sensitive topic. It's difficult to investigate.
If the victim who calls is a female, do you attempt to send out a female officer? Is that possible all the time?
No, it's not possible. It's basically whoever's available at that time will respond and initiate the cases.
What happens with the victim? Let's start with if the victim does need to go to the hospital, because I think you have to sometimes collect forensic evidence from the victim, which in itself can be sort of another traumatizing experience. So talk about what the process is and when the victim might have to go to the hospital for a collection of evidence, even if they're not actually physically hurt too badly.
Again, this is working in tandem with the police department. Generally, the rule of thumb is if it's within 72 hours, if the assault happened within 72 hours, our advocates are going to advocate to the victim that they need to get a forensic exam. Most of the time, we can get them to do it. One of the things that we want to make sure is that they're making informed decisions, but that decision is also the first step in their healing process because they're taking back control of their life. So we give them an option to do this. If they say, yes, I'd like to have an exam, we also say, would you like to police report? We go through that process as well. By law, if it's an adult, we have to offer an exam without a police report. So we do that. And then if they say, yes, I'd like to have an exam, then we call out the SANE nurses.
And what is a SANE nurse?
Sex Assault Nurse Examiner. They've gone through specialized training. They've got 40 hours of didactic work they have to do for adult and pediatrics, and then they have 40 to 80 hours of practical work that they have to do before they can go on shift. So we have specialized nurses that are looking for trauma and evidence of rape if they want the sex assault exam. Our advocates meet them at the hospital. So there's an advocate, there's a nurse, and most of the time we have a detective there as well. So there is a network of people, again, supporting the victim.
If it is a minor, what if the victim lives in the same household as the accused? Chad Bosky, as the police, what do you try to do?
We would remove the minor from that residence, and we would get CWS involved, which is the Child Welfare Service. They would get involved in the investigation as well. We would remove that minor as well as any other minor in the house for safety reasons.
If the victim is an adult and the perpetrator is in the same household, does that same rule apply?
Well, we can't force the adult to leave, but that would be the suggestion.
And this is a good time to remind you, this is Island Issues, and I'm Sherry Bracken. Today we're talking about sexual assault, a really daunting topic, and we don't actually have a higher percentage of sexual assault cases here on the island than other places, but it's a good idea to understand what resources are available here. My guests are Captain Chad Bosky with Hawaii County Police,
Michelle West, the Specialized Sexual Assault Unit Supervisor with Hawaii County Prosecutor's Office, Deborah Chai from the Prosecuting Attorney Victim Assistant Unit, Maggie Thorpe from the Children's Justice Center, Lorraine Davis with YWCA of Hawaii Island, which provides the sexual assault hotline on the island. Next week on Island Issues, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM, and online, lava1053.com, koacountry1077.com. I'll share a conversation I had with Henry Curtis. He is a very knowledgeable guy about utility issues and energy issues. Although he has come out against the NextEra HEI purchase, he's shown me that he can be objective, and I want to talk to him about some of the issues. So join me for my conversation with Henry Curtis next week. And a heads up, on October 24th, the YWCA of Hawaii Island will do a major fundraiser, Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, 7:30 a.m., October 24th, at the YWCA at 145 Ululani Street in Hilo, and at Kona International Marketplace. Come make a donation and support YWCA and their support of victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Now back to our talk story.
A sexual assault occurs. The police get involved. They, that very night, very day, begin their process of investigating. Michelle West, what happens then relative to the prosecutor's office? And I'd like to find out also how victim assistance works into this. But let's start with, what does the prosecutor's office do?
Well, Sherry, I think it might be better for Deborah to answer this question first, because when the case comes into the office, it is assigned a victim counselor first before the prosecutor even sees it.
Oh, so right away. Tell us about victim assistance.
Cases come into our office in two ways, whether it's charged right away and the defendant is in custody, or a case comes to us in what's called screening and a prosecutor will be assigned to determine if criminal charges will be pursued or not. If it's charged, we make contact within hours because we need to let them know what's going to be happening with that court case. So the counselor will contact the person, let them know that the case is in our office, get some input about them, find out if there are safety concerns with them. And kind of going back to your other question, if he is in custody, part of a condition would be for them to stay away from the house. The defendant would not be allowed to stay in that area. If it's not charged, though, we would discuss safety concerns and things like that.
Well, you say charged or not charged. You know, one of the things that people notice on this island sometimes is that in other kinds of crimes, the crime is committed, somebody is arrested, and then they're released. And the question of charging always comes in. And this kind of crime, I think it's particularly important to know from either you, Deborah, or from Michelle, how quickly does charging occur in this kind of case? And is it the kind of thing where the perpetrator is just walking around for a long period of time, or?
Every case is different. It just depends. We have people that report incidents of things that happened years ago. Then there's going to be a little bit longer investigation because we get one shot at this case. We don't get to keep charging it and saying, well, let's try it again. If the case is going to get charged, we need to be ready to take this case to trial. So I don't know if, Michelle, you want to speak to cases that are arrested and charged right away.
Those cases are not abundant because of the fact that in Hawaii, defendants have the right to a preliminary hearing within 48 hours of being arraigned in court. So oftentimes, as has been stated, these investigations do take some time. And so with that short window there, it is very difficult to get everything that we need in terms of an investigation done within that period and be able to get everybody in court that's necessary to prove the case to a judge in order to move it forward. So oftentimes the cases will just be referred to our office with a suspect out of custody, and the vast majority of the cases that actually that come into our office are put in front of the grand jury, which is a slower process.
Why would a case be put before the grand jury? I've never actually understood that, given on this island some cases are before the grand jury and some cases are not.
Well, I can't speak for the general reason in terms of other cases, but I can tell you that because of the sensitive nature of sexual assault cases, we do our very best to protect victims. And the grand jury proceeding is secret. It is only the victim, the court reporter, and the grand jury members, and one or two others who are involved in the process in the room. So it's not open to the public, so that serves to allow us to give the victim the greatest level of protection that we're able to.
Earlier, we heard that there were around 275 sexual assault cases last year. Any idea, Michelle, how many sexual assault prosecutions there were last year?
You know, I couldn't give you that number exactly, but I know there obviously were a lot of cases that were referred. But again, these cases just take a lot of time. The statute of limitations was recently altered, so we don't have as much of a limitation as we used to. So I think that we will be seeing more cases prosecuted, you know, as we go forward.
Any idea how long it typically would take if one was sexually assaulted? When would their case generally be resolved on an average basis? How many months? How many years?
That's hard to say, but most cases don't resolve in just a few months. I mean, you have a few where a plea deal could be worked out fairly quickly, but that's, you know, few and far between. Because of the fact that these cases are so serious, the consequences to the defendant are serious, obviously, so attorneys are not in a hurry to get the cases done because we're looking at potentially putting someone in prison for a good period of time. There's also sex offender registration, which is a huge issue, and that slows the process down because compared to other cases, more sexual assault cases do go to trial just because the stakes are so high on both sides, really.
Another factor to consider, too, is we need the victim to help us with the prosecution of the case. Sometimes they're not in a place where they can participate, and we may have to wait until they are in a better place to do that.
When you say in a place, do you mean physically or emotionally?
Emotionally. It is a difficult thing to ask somebody to do. And even for children, and people often have this misconception that children wouldn't have to testify, they don't need to be present, and that's not true. It is very difficult, and so we have to take that into consideration in the process as well.
Isn't that one of the reasons why the prosecutor's office got the dog to help the victims
yes.
of sexual assault?
Yes, we have faith now. Yes, that's one of the reasons, definitely.
Because I've heard nothing but good things about the ability of a victim to feel more relaxed and comfortable with the dog present.
Yes, and absolutely that's part of the reason that she was brought on board was for our sex assault cases.
Anybody want to add anything at this point? I want to ask about Children's Justice Center.
There is one thing, Sherry, that I would like to add. You've mentioned a couple times about injury in sexual assault cases. And I think that subject comes up frequently with people because they assume that there's going to be some injury. If somebody is sexually assaulted, there is some sort of physical injury that is present. And I just kind of wanted to dispel that myth that in the vast majority of cases, injury does not show up.
And meaning bruises and things like that.
Exactly, exactly. That's part of the problem that we have. You know, it's hard to explain why we don't have that in every case, but we don't. That is something that hampers our cases as well, as that people believe that there should be an injury. And when there isn't, then it's very easy to say, well, there, you know, nothing happened. There's no injury.
Well, my guess is sometimes the victim is so scared, they just want it to be over fast, and fighting leads to being hurt probably, possibly more badly. You mentioned, Michelle, plea deals. I know that the public sometimes reacts strongly when they see in the paper that a plea deal was reached, sometimes in almost any kind of case, but certainly in a sexual assault case, because people feel like it's a terrible crime, the perpetrator should go to jail. Why would you go for a plea deal versus going for getting the perpetrator in jail?
There could be any number of reasons. Deborah mentioned one, the inability or the unwillingness of a victim to participate in the prosecution. We can't force a victim to go to court and testify about what happened to them. We don't have a cooperative victim. We don't really have a choice but to try to settle the case, unfortunately, sometimes for less than the case is worth. That's the way we talk in prosecution, is what is the case worth, and sometimes it's less than what we believe it's worth because of evidentiary problems. We don't have the evidence that we need to prove the most serious charges, or the victim won't cooperate, or any number of other issues that come up.
You mentioned the sex offender registry. I know that I can go on, anybody can go on to the state judiciary website and find a list of all registered sex offenders. Under what circumstances is somebody required to be on the sexual offender database?
Back to the issue of plea bargaining. If we have a case where we have a strong case and we feel it's a case that should go forward, that's not a case that we're going to plea bargain, and that's a case that usually would end up going to trial because of the stigma that is attached to registration as a sex offender. So perpetrators just don't want to register as a sex offender. So any type of case where there is a rape, penetration, a child molest, you know, a child under the age of 14 years old, the most serious cases are ones that we would absolutely require registration, and we would not deal those out, assuming that we had what we need to prove the case.
Sort of an out-of-order question. After hearing that so many of the perpetrators are people known to the victims on TV, I often see situations where there's what's called a date rape drug, when somebody puts something in the drink and the victim succumbs and doesn't remember. How often does that happen here on this island? Chad Boskey, you want to answer that?
I wouldn't say it happens a lot, but off the top of my head, recall a few that our victims would attribute to some sort of maybe a drug or maybe something placed in a drink, waking up the next day not remembering a thing.
Sure, if I could add in, you know, people don't traditionally consider alcohol a drug, but alcohol is the drug that is used in the most in sexual assault.
Do we have any programs that are run in the schools these days that might discuss prevention of sexual assault, whether for boys or girls? Lorraine Davis, why don't you address that?
The state does have curriculum for the schools that can be done in the schools. Now, whether it's being followed or not, I don't have an answer for that. In the past, our unit has been responsible for going into schools and talking to kids about healthy relationships, good touch, bad touch. We went from pre-K all the way up to college age. Since then, the funding has been cut.
Deborah, when we were speaking about this briefly off air, you mentioned something about other states that have sexual prevention programs.
Statistics will show that programs that address like good touch, bad touch in schools, typically those states will have higher rates of reports. So when they have those programs, the report rates go up because oftentimes kids don't understand or they're too scared to say that they've been touched or they've been groomed by somebody to tell them that it isn't a bad thing. So those states will definitely have higher statistics, and when those programs stop, so do the reporting.
Maggie Thorpe, tell us what the Children's Justice Center is and does.
When a child has been identified as a potential victim of sexual assault, they're brought into the Children's Justice Center, which is a facility that is child-friendly, and it's one place where the investigators can come and interview the child. They're specially trained in how they interview a victim. So it's not like an interrogation when you're interviewing a child victim. You want to be gentle, you want to be consistent, and you want to elicit the information. One of the things that's really important is not to put any words in a child's mouth. It's videotaped, and a copy of that video will go to the prosecutor's office and the police for their report. The other thing that we do at the Children's Justice Center is we gather all the individuals that are in this room and additional individuals that work on these cases for child abuse, and we coordinate a multidisciplinary team. We review the cases so everybody's up to date on any of the information from each of the organizations that are working with that client and to make sure everybody's on the same wavelength when they're working the case.
Is the Children's Justice Center all around the island?
Yeah, on this island we have two, one in Kona and one in Hilo. There are five total in the state of Hawaii.
I mentioned earlier that this is part of a nationwide program, so clearly you use techniques that must have been proven to work in helping resolve these situations, yeah?
Yeah, the difference of a Children's Justice Center or a Child Advocacy Center is kind of like one-stop shopping, as I kind of refer to it, is where you would bring the victim to one location and you have the professionals come to one location that's child-friendly to work with the victim. In the old days, they used to have the victim go to the police department and relay their story, and the same with Child Protective Services. They'd have to go to the hospital and relay what had happened to them. They work with victims' assistance and the same thing. And that in itself, the child's testimony and the child's information that she or he would share could change over time because they may not have a rapport with the individual that's talking to them. The whole thing is traumatic to a child, so what you want to do is relieve the stress and have it child-friendly and at one location.
Frankly, this particular type of crime is traumatic for anybody, no matter what their age, obviously more for children. What is done on this island for post-sexual assault counseling, follow-up from the YWCA or other organizations? Lorraine Davis, maybe you can address that.
Well, our group will follow up after the crisis. We have an intervention specialist that will do outreach to the victims just to do a check-in and see if there's anything that they need and kind of break down some of the barriers that keep them from coming into therapy, because we found that it's about a six-month time from the time they're assaulted to the time they're ready to come into therapy. So during that 6 months, we have staff who are just kind of keeping in touch and letting them know that somebody's still out there that cares about them. And then we bring them into therapy, and we bring their families into therapy if needed also.
And this is a service that is available through the YWCA. Any place on Hawaii Island?
We have it in Hilo and Kona.
And is this a service that people pay for?
No, but we would accept donations.
I understand that the prosecutor's office and the police are paid for via our tax dollars, which is a good thing. But how about the YWCA? How do you raise funds to support these kinds of programs, including your sexual assault hotline?
We have contracts supported by the police and the Children's Justice Center and the Victims Assistance Unit. We also have money through the Attorney General's office. Then it's grant writing, and I'm wearing my Walk a Mile t-shirt, and it's fundraising by having events.
What is Walk a Mile?
Walk a Mile is our fundraising event. It's a signature event that we do every year. It's going to be October 24th, but the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, it comes from the adage, is you don't know what's happened until you've walked a mile in their shoes. We invite men to walk in high heels. We literally take a mile path. We ask the men to register for $10 and then ask their friends, how much would you pay to see me in this? We give out prizes, and we raise, last year, it was somewhere between $15,000 and $16,000 that we raised. And what that does is that's the hotel room if we need to find a place, or the gas card for the person who, you know, if they have to make a decision on whether they come to therapy or they drive to get groceries, it's a no-brainer. So we assist in a variety of ways.
I can say that in this conversation, at least five people in this room have probably worn high heels. And my question is, does Captain Chad Boskey participate in Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, and do you wear high heels?
Lorraine has made me promise that I'm going to be there.
And will you be wearing high heels?
I hope not.
Oh, he will be wearing high heels. They provide them if you don't have them.
And they have decorative flip-flops.
Yes.
Children's Justice Center, how are you supported?
Through the state judiciary, we also get federal funds and grant money. And with our grant money, what we do is we train our investigators in forensic interviewing. We provide training for anything that has to do with sex assault and sex abuse of children, physical abuse, and how a crime is committed and how it moves through the court system in both family court and district court and criminal court.
What have I not asked today that we should share with our listeners? And let me start with you, Michelle West, the prosecutor. What should we know?
Just know that we are committed to finding justice for the victims of sexual assault on Hawaii Island.
Okay. And Deborah, you're with the Victims Assistance Unit in the prosecutor's office. What should we know that we didn't already talk about?
We actually already talked about it, but I just want to reiterate it, and Captain Boskey brought it up, is start by believing. And that's actually a campaign that's super important, that we do believe. People don't make these things up. People who report need to be supported in that process.
Captain Boskey, what would you like to add?
I just like to let everyone know that we do have a good group that is working on both sides of the island. We're very committed. We do our best, and we try our best to provide the services that our community needs with this type of crime and investigation.
Maggie Thorpe, Children's Justice Center, what would you like to add?
I just think it's important for people to understand that we don't work individually as an organization. I mean, there is a group of us that are working these cases. We want to see justice brought to a victim, and we have to be very compassionate.
Lorraine Davis, YWCA, final comments.
Even if you're scared, make the call.
And the phone number people should call if they have been sexually assaulted or if they have questions is what?
935-0677.
935-0677. And is it staffed 24 hours a day?
Yes, it is.
Thank you so much to all my guests today, talking about a really sensitive subject. And I urge you, if you do have questions, call the YWCA. And don't hesitate to call the Prosecutor's Office, the Victims Assistance Unit, Hawaii County Police Department. They will put you in touch with somebody. And if you have a minor child who's involved, Children's Justice Center is absolutely a valuable asset. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. Thank you so much to our listeners. And, of course, thank you to our guests. I will see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.